Welcome back to the Jump Around, our Badger-dedicated show on ESPN Madison and ESPN Milwaukee's YouTube stream. I'm Jim Rutledge alongside Pablo Iglesias. We are thrilled to be joined by someone that I think I've followed on Twitter for a very long time. Never thought I'd have the opportunity to talk with her, but Nicole Auerbach is on the show. She's from NBC Sports, lead college football and college basketball insider, and with SiriusXM as well. Nicole, thanks for hopping on with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Fantastic. I'm just going to be super simple with it. From the outside, what happened and what's wrong with Badger football? Because we got a million ideas here, but maybe we're just too close to the situation.
Well, I'm sure one of the million ideas is probably right. It's confusing from afar. I mean, this was one of the coaching hires that I think we all thought was a home run hire. It's rare to be so wrong, especially when you feel like, okay, Luke Fickell, Midwest guy, going to a Big Ten school, like match made in heaven. The couple of things that I keep fixating on to figure out at least a little bit about how we got here are, you know, you miss on the offensive coordinator hire. You know, the first one right out of the gate, you decide to try to go a little air raid, like go away from Wisconsin's past, but also the way that the roster was built and the strengths of that roster with the run game. And so, you know, I remember that whole first year just being like, I don't even know what they want to be offensively. Like the identity was so shifting every day, every game, it was different. And sometimes they would run the ball well and you're like, okay, that looks like Wisconsin. Sometimes, you know, they would try to pass. And then of course you have the quarterback injuries that didn't help any of that. So I think the lack of an offensive identity and kind of wasting 2 years trying to change who Wisconsin has always been was something that always jumps out to me. And then I think in general, you know, when you talk to people around Wisconsin, and this was something at a number of Big Ten schools when NIL first became legal, you know, there were a lot of places that wanted to do it differently or didn't want to jump in the same way that like Tennessee, right? They were at the forefront. And there were some other programs that were really aggressive about it. And they were willing to push the boundaries with recruits and prospects out of the portal. And there were some Big Ten schools that weren't really comfortable about that. They didn't want to get into spending wars, or they wanted to reward players that were on the roster and had produced for them before really giving them that paycheck. And so I think, you know, a lot of people are realizing you have to be willing to spend money on prospects to get someone to you and to contend with when you're battling some of these schools for some of the best players. So I think the slow acknowledgement of that and willingness to engage in that has definitely been part of it, and just a lack of aggressiveness in the NIL space. That's going to hurt you in this day and age. But I really think a lot of it has to do with that offensive identity and just being really inept on that side of the ball. And again, some of that is just bad luck with injuries, but some of that is scheme and trying to change too much. But it makes it really hard to quote Luke Fickell for the last couple of weeks. Like, if you score 0 points, you don't really put yourself in a position to win games. So it's been a lot of different things, and I'm sure you guys could add to the laundry list. But again, I just kind of want to underscore like how surprised I am that it got to that point. I mean, I really did think that this was a great fit and was going to work really well right out of the gate.
Nicole, going off of that too, you hit it on the head, and we've talked about this on the show, where at the time it felt like that it was the right hire. This was the right hire for Wisconsin. Your assessment as he rounds out his third year, and a two-parter as well, if there even is a shot for him to right this ship, how can he do that?
Well, I mean, I think that there's a lot of schools that would love to not be in this coaching carousel and would like to give their current coach, you know, another chance or invest money in the offseason into the roster. And I think Virginia is a really good example of that, that instead of making a change and moving on from Tony Elliott last year, they put money into the roster. They hit on some of these transfers. Another year in the system, the program continued its build, and here they are, you know, sitting in the catbird seat in the ACC for a playoff spot. So that route does work, and I think a lot of programs are trying to do that before they make a change for a head coach that's going to be very expensive, and certainly it would be at Wisconsin. I mean, $25 million is a lot of money. I know we're hearing buyouts that are in the $50 million range, so we don't think about this as real money, but it's a very expensive decision, and so I take from Chris McIntosh's letter to fans that, you know, he wants to continue to try to do everything from an athletic department standpoint and a money standpoint that they can do to position Luke Fickell to succeed. And, you know, it was a very different kind of statement and letter to fans than the one we got the same day, which was, you know, Florida State's athletic director writing to fans about Mike Norvell and putting out a statement saying, I'm going to evaluate this program at the end of the year. That read to me like, hey, donors, let's get $53 million together by the end of the season. Wisconsin's felt like, hey, we are still trying to work through this, and we want to give Fickell and give this staff all of the tools they need to be competitive in this day and age. And obviously part of that is Chris McIntosh going out on a limb to hire him and in wanting to give him all of that he would need to succeed. But some of it just felt a little bit outdated of saying, you know, we're not doing what we need to do from a resource standpoint. You should. You're in the Big Ten. You want to be nationally competitive. You want to be in the college football playoff picture. So that was a little bit surprising to hear that in the year 2025. But I think, you know, to continue out the rest of the season, obviously you'd like to not lose out. But I think we saw a competitive game against Oregon. And that was, I think, really encouraging after a couple of blowout losses where nothing really was working well. Playing a team that is a top 10 team in the country, close and tight, especially, you know, tighter than we've seen a lot of other teams play them, I think is really encouraging. So I'll be interested to see how they close out the season here. But everyone, you know, tracks the same sort of thing when you're looking at a team in a losing streak or where a coach is on the hot seat. You're looking at how hard those players are playing for that coach. What are signs of progress? What players, you know, are really important to retain that have relationships with the head coach? There's a lot of things like that you're looking at down the stretch.
Nicole, you mentioned something too about pushing money into your roster. I wanted to ask a follow up on this too. With buyouts, with the rev share now, that system now moving into effect a little bit more. Do you think that changes budgets at all? Is our teams and programs looking more into that too? How does that affect the landscape?
I mean, it's a good question because, you know, you would think that in this day and age, you wouldn't want to pay a $50 million buyout. And we've seen multiple places willing to do that. And of course, these are also schools that have offset language in there. So if James Franklin gets another job, Penn State is not on the hook for, you know, $46 million or whatever the final figure ends up being. It will be offset by new income for a new job. But there is a willingness to make these changes, even though they're really expensive, because some schools are just too worried about falling behind in the sport that brings in all the money and that drives college athletics forward. So that's part of, I think, the calculation that people are making, even though we've all heard all of these athletic directors and university presidents complain about having no money and having to make tough decisions about scholarships and sports sponsorships. These are the same people who've been saying that because now you can pay your athletes up to $20.5 million directly from rev share each year, yet they're still making these decisions on these buyouts. So it feels like some of the elements of a traditional market don't apply when rich boosters just come in and kind of swoop in and save the day and can help make a coaching change because you're not really, you know, kind of balancing your spending and your income and your costs and all of those things the way that a normal business would. So that's how I explain it. And that's why I think it feels like money isn't real, even though like we are talking about a lot of money. There have just been such big decisions that kind of numb us to the impact of, you know, a $25 million, $50 million buyout.
And on that note, and I'm sure you remember pre-NIL days when the Badgers were talking, when Barry Alvarez was here, Brett Bielema not paying assistants or couldn't get the facilities up to par, and they were kind of in the bottom of the Big Ten and paying assistants and some of those things. So they've never been a program that does have money just waiting to be given, like a Tennessee or Alabama. And so that is one concern I have. And then the other part of it is that I think Luke Fickell is a good coach, and I agree with you that he made a mistake that set things back with Phil Longo, and they're trying to fix it, and he's had bad injury luck. The problem I worry about here is that this is a brand equity problem, and you're trying to raise funds, and you're trying to get fans to, and I know they go to the stadium and drink lots of beer, number one or number two, yay us, but like otherwise, like, how do you get these businesses to buy in? How do you get these boosters, the Ted Kellners of the world, our biggest booster in this area, like, how do you get them to buy in if the product ends up being this year two wins, and at times it looks completely incompetent out there? So like, that's the concern I have, because I do think in a normal world, Luke Fickell can turn this around. But brand nowadays in everything, but especially college football, is just as important as what you are as a coach.
I think that's definitely contributing to like the lack of patience we're seeing in so many different places. And it's this fear of falling behind and falling out of national relevancy. So I completely understand that. And I remember talking to someone close to the program earlier in the year, and it was after the Maryland game, because that felt like a turning point to me, you know, with the students chanting Fire Fickle, the way that Maryland dominated that game. And that person was saying that there wasn't an appetite to pay a $25 million buyout. Like, people believed in patience and, you know, another full offseason and change. And then they said, well, I mean, like, if they lose out, like a 2-win season, who knows, right? And so I do think that that ultimately could change the calculus and decisions. But it does go into what you're saying. I mean, you are talking about investment from your biggest donors, your fans, your engagement, all of those things are really, really important. And that's why we have seen so many midseason coach firings, because, you know, yes, okay, maybe you'll have a spark like we saw from UCLA for 3 weeks with an interim coach, but that's not really what you're making that decision for. It gives you maybe a little bit jump in the coach market as you're looking for coaches. But I think really it's just to signal to your money people that you're making a change. This was unacceptable and you're going to move on. And I think in a lot of these situations, you know, Penn State may not get a coach that comes in with a better career winning record than James Franklin had, but you're starting over with someone new. You know, the warts that you've seen in them aren't there. You're starting fresh. And your clock resets as well. And so that's why I think, you know, some of these places are making changes, but I also think there's a lot of schools hoping to avoid this carousel because it's going to be really expensive, and because, you know, there's not enough home run hires to go around. And again, even in this situation for Wisconsin, were they to make a change, I mean, they got a guy that seemed like a home run hire, seemed like a good fit before, and was coming off of, you know, obviously had made the CFP at Cincinnati. So I just think it shows how difficult it is to hire a coach, and maybe, you know, even more how important the hires are and the resources around that coach as well, at least when you're talking like 1-3 year turnarounds. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Indiana, because I think what Kurt Cignetti is doing is affecting that patience everywhere else, because everyone can see what he's done in 1 year and now 2 years. Last year wasn't a fluke. They're going to go back to the college football playoff. It's Indiana. They've lost more games than anybody else in college football history. If they can do this, well, then why can't we? And you have so many different schools and athletic directors and donors saying that. So I think that's also applying some pressure on schools like Wisconsin right now as they're weighing whether or not to make a decision.
Look, Wisconsin once put 83 points on Indiana. Actually, I believe Nate Tice even played in that game. So, like, that was a beatdown of epic proportions. I don't know if the Badgers are going to score 83 points in Big Ten play this year. So, like, that's where these two programs have gotten. And I do think Indiana, you know, they seem to hold a grudge because they did beat up on Brett Bielema after that, you know, when they got a chance to, because Brett was the guy that ran up the score on Indiana back in the day. I could see Wisconsin having an ugly game there. But the other thing with Fickle that's working against them, as you mentioned, it felt like a home run hire. Some people locally were upset. Jim Leonard, obviously, Wisconsin kid, played for the Badgers. He got them bowl eligible, kind of turned around that team. The players on the team wanted Jim Leonard. And it's all this Luke Fickle's an outsider, which I'm sure you've heard in other programs. When someone outside the program comes in, it's just as prevalent here. And so a lot of fans are calling for, oh, what happened if we would have had Jim Leonard, or a guy like Lance Leipold, who was a Badger GA and coached at Whitewater and was a great coach at Whitewater and then Buffalo and obviously Kansas. Or the hot name now, as he just made the news a ton, is Jason Eck at New Mexico. Again, from Wisconsin, lacrosse guy, played for the Badgers, friends with a lot of former Badgers. So two parts, any thoughts on those coaches? But then the other part is, like, how much easier, or is it more difficult for a quote-unquote, because I think a Scott Frost coming back, but like a quote-unquote one of us guys coming in and coaching, because I think fans are more willing to give a longer leash if they're from Wisconsin or had played for Wisconsin.
I think that's definitely true. We've been talking about that a lot with the Matt Rhule conversation about Penn State Open, and, you know, does he want to go back to, you know, his home, right? And, and, you know, he did see what happened to Scott Frost. If it goes south after you come home, it's really tough, because then it's like you can't go back to your alma mater in the same way. You can't go home in the same way. But I do think in general it helps, because what you're describing with the factions and what happened with Jim Leonard and really the Barry Alvarez, like, Paul Chris, like the line of coaches, the line of succession, that family, and going away from it, it does create different factions. And I was a student reporter at Michigan when Michigan hired Rich Rodriguez. And it was so similar, where it was like, here's this outsider. So you had a faction of people that were willing to give him a chance. You had a faction of people that were like, TBD, we'll see. And then you had people that were just like, nope, he'll never get us. He'll never understand us. So you do run into that situation when you hire someone that doesn't have ties to your program. I do think some of the best coaches in college football history were hired by places they did not have direct ties to. And so that's always worth pointing out. And I think that, you know, even if we were to say like, hey, this Kurt Cignetti hire for Indiana has been amazing, right? That wasn't even necessarily a coach that got hired and we were like, oh my God, slam dunk. Like, that's the guy, right? Like, there was a 64-year-old head coach getting right. the only opportunity he could land in the Power Four, and it was at Indiana, right? He couldn't get a bigger job than that. So I think all of that comes into play as we're evaluating this, the idea of winning a press conference and not. I think in this cycle, a lot of places are not going to win the press conference because there's just not enough big name coaches. There's a lot of really good coaches out there, but not necessarily the big names. I love Lance Leipold. I think what he's done at Kansas is remarkable. They have become a real player. Like he's raised the floor so high at Kansas, which is really, really hard to do. And they've invested in that and trying to keep him there as well. Jason Eck, I actually talked to him quite a bit because we had their season opener against Michigan on NBC. He's awesome. Really, really enjoy him. They've had an amazing turnaround this season. And that's just someone who's a great personality and great face of the program. So, yeah, those are all I agree with your general sentiment that I think if you hire someone who you can sell as one of your own, you do win over that faction that was going to be skeptical when you hire an outsider. And so that can help. That could buy you some more patience. It'll also make it more awkward when, you know, Michigan and Jim Harbaugh can't beat Ohio State. You do have to give them a longer leash. Scott Frost probably got another season and a half longer than he really deserved at Nebraska. So it definitely does come into play.
Nicole, last question for me. Again, the gut reaction when Chris McIntosh put out that letter and also put out his public vote of confidence for Luke Fickell, you know, what did that make you feel more optimistic or more skeptic when that first came out?
Well, it made me think that there wasn't anything imminent, right? Because I think that day and that weekend, we did wonder if Wisconsin was going to make a change with those shutout losses and just how things were going right in season. It made me think that, you know, there was going to be some more patience and some, you know, hope that things could turn around. It did also, again, remind me that Chris McIntosh put his neck out there to make this hire, to go outside of, you know, that Wisconsin lineage. And he really should and is going to give all of the support that he possibly can to make it work. You know, I read that and it made me think that he's thinking about giving him another year and saying, you know, like what we were talking about with Virginia, putting the money into the roster and trying to rebuild that way instead of, you know, paying a big buyout and then having to buy out the rest of the staff and then go hire somebody else. And again, we'll see. A 2-win season can change that calculus, but that was sort of what I was getting out of that statement. It seemed a lot less imminent and more, let's do everything we can from a resource standpoint that we probably should have already been doing to give Luke Fickell every opportunity and maybe treat this year a little bit like year one because you've, you know, hired a different offensive coordinator and tried to go back to certain roots. But again, a two win season can change all sorts of calculus and all sorts of conversations. But I do think that this is the kind of school that would not want to get into this carousel. It's just going to be so, so expensive. And I think we've already seen this with the coaches that are out there that have been attached to some of these openings, getting pretty significant raises and extensions. There's just not a lot of big name coaches where you're going to be able to be like, yes, this is a clear upgrade and it's going to work. It's just, it is about resetting a clock. So if you do make a change, that's what it is. It's a fresh start. And maybe it is someone with ties to Wisconsin. But I just think it's going to be really hard for like a miracle fix. There is only one Kurt Cignetti. That might be a unicorn situation.
And yes, and you're right on that. And I also, you know, the Mac thing, the letter for my part of it was funny because it's like, we don't have enough money to fire our coach, but we're going to raise more money to pay our players. But Chris, you were in charge of not having enough money to fire our coach. So like, it is hard to buy in from a fan's perspective on that. But last question overall here, just putting you in, I'm not saying Luke Fickell's shoes, but this can't be fun for Luke Fickell. This can't be what he was hoping for. And I remember Gary Anderson just leaving, surprising a lot of people. But it wasn't working when he left here at the same time. So it wasn't completely shocking. It was working, and now we would take it. But back then, it's like, oh, this is only 8 wins. Like, this is not good enough. So I do wonder if there's a possibility where the Badgers might say, hey, Luke, like, if your agent wants to talk to another school and you can mitigate the buyout by just going there, like Gary went to Oregon State, maybe that's in play. But if how hard do you think this is for Luke Fickell? And I'm not saying he wants to be fired, but at some point he's got to be like, this is impossible to clean this whole thing up, and I need a fresh start. We all need a fresh start.
He has not looked like he's enjoying this season. No. And listen, I don't think anyone is. You know, he's too competitive for that, and I'm sure he's been incredibly frustrated as well. And I think we've heard that come through this season. But, you know, just a lot of the, again, the bad injury luck and a lot of things that have been outside of his control that's been really tough. But, yeah, you are taking a program that used to, you know, regularly, you know, contend for division, which doesn't exist anymore, and reach Big Ten championship games. And now you're trying to just avoid, you know, losing to Maryland. It's a totally different world. And I think it's got to be immensely frustrating. I think all coaches should be keeping their head on a swivel. I think before it bottomed out completely for James Franklin, my thought on him was that he should look around. He should try to get out. And obviously it got to the point where, you know, Penn State needed to fire him. But I do think sometimes, you know, you do realize things aren't working and you do want to start the clock and get a fresh slate somewhere else. It hasn't been that long at Wisconsin, and I don't think you're become one of these head coaches without believing that you can turn things around, that you can build up programs. But you do need the resources and you need the players. And so, you know, we'll see what happens here. But yeah, I can't imagine he's sleeping very well at night with the way that they've lost some of these games.
Nicole, awesome stuff. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, anytime, guys.
All right. This is The Jump Around on ESPN Wisconsin's YouTube streams.